We're in a series called Mooring Lines. I put a picture up here of a ship tied to a line, and I actually got it from Chris. He found it and let me use it. And we've been in a series called Mooring Lines. What's holding you in the harbor? What's keeping us back from sailing into God's intended for His people? And we've talked about different mooring lines, the mooring line of fear. Something that holds us back from engaging in what God has for us. The mooring line of consumerism. How we begin to think it's all about what's there for us, not about what God calls us to. The mooring line of tradition. And today I want to talk about the mooring line of past and pain. And I'm going to paint you three very, very specific pictures. I love the picture of the boat here. It's a massive, massive ship, and it's being held by ropes that are seemingly quite small. When we were in Florida, and there's a waterway system there at the Disney World Park, and you can get on a boat and move from one place to the other place, the boats would pull up along the dock, and some guys were really good, you know, they'd come in and not make a bump, and other guys just kind of smash the thing into the dock, and but they had these little cleats, and they would just drop this little line with a hook over. And then once the hook was there, they would engage the motor on the boat and keep the back end turned in, and they would leave it engaged, and there'd be pressure all the time on it, but the boat could go nowhere while it was moored. If they ever forgot when they went to take off and just backed up and turned and tried to drive away, that mooring line would just smash them right back to the dock. There was nothing wrong with their motor. There was nothing wrong with their boat. There's nothing physically wrong except there was a mooring line. They were leaving on time. Their intention was right. They had a destination and they knew what to do, but the mooring lines weren't cast off. And we're talking about what's holding us in the harbor. And today, this is a very difficult message. Because it's one that just eats my heart. It's just real. You're walking in my garden. And so today, to understand that I talk to myself as well as you, and this is one that I need to practice and make real in my life on a regular basis as we want to move into what God has for us. I'm going to take you to Luke chapter 22, verses 47 to 52. We'll read it, and then we're going to take three pictures, three snapshots, and talk about them. Jesus has just spent the evening with his 12 closest friends at the end of a pretty incredible week. Not long before this, he's been coming into Jerusalem and he stops and his friend Lazarus is raised from the dead when Jesus calls him out. And then there's the triumphal entry, you know, and the confrontation in the temple, and the religious leaders are totally worried about this Jesus guy, and they get a plan together. Because his followers are just rising up. This could be it. This is, you know, the crowds are gathering and they're trying to figure out how to control all this. And Jesus' disciples are excited because they think what's going to happen now is the kingdom's going to be established. And Jesus is going to take charge and we're going to overthrow the Roman occupation and this will be great and David's throne will be reestablished. And Jesus knows that they don't get it. And so he spent these hours with his disciples and he knows what's coming and we find him in the garden praying. And right before this passage in verse 44 of chapter 2, it says, "And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. 'Why are you sleeping?' he asked them. 'Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation.'" And this is where we pick our story up. "While he was still speaking, a crowd came up. And the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, 'Judas, why are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?' When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, 'Lord, should we strike with our swords?' And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear, his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this." And he touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come for him, "Am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs?" The first picture I want to paint for you, if you just all close your eyes for a minute, I'll wake you up if you go. It's okay. Okay, just close your eyes. Come on, you can do it. You're still looking. No. Picture an action movie with swords. So I don't know what the last one you saw was swords. It might have been some kind of a knight or something. And picture the big sword out, right? Picture a big heavy sword and watch them just arc it through the air and swing it around. It's graceful. It's majestic. It's dangerous. You see the sharp edges flashing. And you can look at me again. That's okay. Yeah, Harv, you got to wake up. No. And I want you to see a great picture of sword swinging. Now, this story fascinates me. Peter is, in one of the other Gospels, listed as the disciple who does the sword swinging. And we know that that's consistent with Peter's character, right? First one over the side of the boat, first one into the action, first one to put a foot wrong. That's Peter. And he has wounded somebody. He's had a rough night. If you go back to the story, you know that Peter has, when he got to supper, been corrected by Jesus because he was after Jesus about washing his feet. And Jesus said, "Hey, Peter, if I don't wash your feet, you know, you can have no part of me." And he says, "Okay, wash my feet. Wash all of me." Then he discovered at supper that one of their own was a traitor. And he was having trouble believing this because these are the people that are intimate and close. And he has a lot of questions for Jesus about that. And how disappointing would it be to find out that there was a traitor in your midst? That someone that you loved, someone that you knew, was going to hurt. So then he said, "Jesus, whatever it is, I'm with you, man. To the very end, I'll die for you." Read the story in John. And Jesus looks at him, he says, "Peter, buddy, before the night's over, you're going to disown me three times." Well, Peter's committed like the last 3 years of his life to this gig, and he's tried everything he knows to show Jesus just how committed he is. And he's filled with zeal, and he says, "Jesus, I'll lay my life down for you." And he says, "No, Peter, not only won't you do that, you're going to disown me three times before the night's through." And then they go to the garden, and he falls asleep. Can you believe it? And Jesus says, "Why are you sleeping? Could you not even keep watch?" And then the soldiers come. Well, boy, I identify with Peter. I know what it's like to fail. Man, I know what it's like to let people down. Have you ever had that thought that, I won't fall for that again? I'm filled with zeal, filled with the best of intentions, with a desire to show his commitment. Peter swings his sword and lops the ear off somebody. Well, the servant of the high priest loses his right ear. You know, from his perspective, he was just doing his job. The Bible doesn't tell us if he agreed or disagreed with his reasons for being there. But he was the servant of the high priest, and the high priest was there, so he was there. And there's been many interpretations of the event, and we'll watch a little clip of it later. But it suggests that Peter's the one that starts the action, and that the servant of the high priest wasn't being aggressive necessarily, but that Peter just lashed out. And now his life has been forever changed. What do you think he thinks about the disciples of Jesus? How do you think he feels towards them at this point? Haven't we all been that sword swinger at times? Haven't we all been that person who, without regard necessarily for what's going on around us, just wanted to show Jesus we wouldn't fail. Early in my ministry, I used to be on a rotation where I had to go to the hospital and visit. And when you go up to the hospital, there's a book there. And if somebody wants a visit from a pastor or a nurse thinks she should see somebody, she writes the name in the book, right? So I hated the rotation, but I went and I breezed through the hospital and there was a guy's name there and I stopped in to see him and he wanted to talk. We talked for a few minutes. He said, "Will you come back and see me?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely, I'll come back and see you." And I headed out. The next day I got really busy and probably something extremely important like a friend dropping by for coffee happened. But I didn't make it back up to the hospital, right? And I felt that thing inside that went, "Oh, I should go. Yeah, I'm going to go tomorrow. I'm going to go." And tomorrow showed up. And you know, wouldn't you know it, I just had phone call after phone call and there's people looking for stuff. And I had an appointment in the afternoon and my day went by again. I never got there. And all day it was in my head that I should go. And I felt bad about it, but I didn't go. So the next day, after I kind of got straightened around, I headed up to the hospital. And the nurse said, "I'm sorry, he passed away yesterday." "It's not dead." Oh, did I feel good. What a poor excuse for a pastor. So I sat in my office and beat myself up for the day. And promised that wouldn't happen again. Now the danger was to head right back to the hospital and find somebody who may or may not have asked for a visit and gone in and given them a good visit. The whole gospel. Do not pass go, do not collect $200. Like, it's straight to jail. You know, I wanted to prove to God that I wasn't going to fail him like that. Let him down. I didn't listen, right? And it turned me into this person that was zealous in a way that probably left other people wounded. I know that failure that Peter felt. I get what he was trying to do. But he didn't understand what Jesus was doing. He didn't understand what was happening. And the Bible says, great intentions aren't enough without love. It does damage. Well, how many times have we been that motivated sword swinger, wanting to prove to Jesus we're committed, driven by what we haven't done or by guilt, well-intentioned, full of zeal, telling a brother in the Lord off because we don't want to see him make the same mistake we made, dealing with someone gracelessly because we're just convinced we're right. And Peter is told, put away your sword. The second snapshot I want to take you to this morning is called Broken and Bleeding. I want you to freeze on the wounded servant. Now here's my contention, right? Immediate pain and shock that he's been hit. Hand up, that's the right ear, sorry. Hand up. And the head wounds bleed like crazy, right? There's blood flowing down between his fingers. But I talked to a doctor a while back and some different people, and they said, "Nah, it probably wasn't a fatal wound. You know, people have been hurt way worse than this. You could probably staunch the flow of blood and recover, and you would just be scarred forever, right?" And so I got thinking about that, and you know, he could have run and gotten some help. And he could have wrapped it up and taken off. And there would have been an incredible scar and permanent disfigurement. Let's just imagine that that happened. That he bandaged it up and took off. What do you think he thought then, had that happened every time he put his hat on, or every time he combed his hair, or every time a child looked at him funny, or every time he he couldn't hear something properly. He would think about those followers of Jesus and what they'd done. Now, we know what Peter's motivation was, right? We know what his intention was. He was going to prove to Jesus he was willing to follow him to the death. But this guy doesn't know that. And while he might not have died, he would have been disfigured and scarred. And he would have carried it for the rest of his life. A visible to everyone constant reminder every day, remembering what others had done. You see, this is the hard one. I don't care what their intentions were. When I'm bleeding, I say, I'm hurting. Look at this. I can relate to this picture. Aside from the physical wound, haven't we all been wounded by graceless words? People who didn't know, but they said things to us that cut us to the deepest part of who we are. Cut by gossip. Attacked for unfulfilled expectations or simply put aside because we didn't measure up. Or how about someone with an agenda out to prove that they're not going to fail, so you're the one left broken and bleeding. See, I'm convinced that our churches are absolutely chock full of people with this pain in their life. And I'm convinced as I talk about sword swinging, most of us look down and go, boy, I remember times when I've said things in a way I shouldn't, where I haven't been sensitive to what the Spirit is doing, or where I blundered into a situation and I know I had the right meaning, but I did that in the wrong way. And lots of us have been hurt and cut, and our inclination is to run and to bandage up and to heal. But the picture doesn't finish there. The third picture I want you to see is with chaos around him, the disciples scattering, and the guy bleeding and in shock, Jesus saying, put down your sword. But I want you to get this. He's probably down on the ground. And so Jesus gets down and he touches his ear. And it's instantly healed and made whole. What does he think now? I mean, I'm amazed he let Jesus anywhere near him. Do you know what kind of courage it would take to let Jesus come close if that just happened to you? Because that's the guy that's your follower. I'm amazed that Jesus notices. There's a lot going on here. He's just pleaded with the Father. If there's any way, take this cup from me. I do not want to go through this. He's been sweating like drops of blood. It has been emotional and intense, and yet Jesus notices the hurt person. And when I get to heaven, I want to hear this guy's story. I want to hear what happened from here. Because every time now that the servant felt his right ear, looked in a mirror, washed his face, what will he remember? Will he remember the wounds or the healing touch? You see, he's going to remember the healing touch because he's touched and made whole. Complete. He came face to face with a living, mighty, powerful God who touched his life and changed him. See, when we're wounded, we run, try and stop the bleeding. We heal up, get on with life, live with our scars. We say inside, I'm going to protect myself. I will never let them hurt me like that again. And we become little islands in our relationships and in our churches, in our lives. We say we can't trust them. I'll never expose myself to that. I've got to be on guard. And we become cynical, bitter, and a full life is no longer an option for us. And we point to the scars of people and say that's why. Jesus wants us whole. He wants us touched. He wants us restored. But that isn't as easy as you think. So let's ask the big question. Okay, sword swingers, you know who you are? The words of Jesus, put down your swords. He's an almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing God. You don't need to convince him of your intention and your zeal by swinging a sword or wounding someone. Put down the harsh words, put down the condemnation for others. Put it down. But hey, some of you might be thinking, I'm out of the game. Well, don't forget the story of Peter. Failure in this way doesn't disqualify you. It's simply an opportunity to repent and move on. Peter's still the cornerstone on which he built the church. He was at the day of Pentecost. He was someone God used in big, big ways. And Jesus, when he met and had breakfast with him after he did this, said, hey, if you love me, feed my sheep. I got a role for you. I got a job for you. Being a sword swinger doesn't disqualify you. So don't go there. But never, ever, ever prove your zeal and intention at the expense of others. Okay. Secondly, broken and bleeding. Anyone else out there? Come and be touched. But here's the big question. Do you really want to be healed? See, Jesus asks this question in a story we find in Scripture where he goes to the pool. And it's a pool where if you're an invalid or you're in the care of society and you have illness, this is where they take you and you gather around the pool. And the myth is that when the waters stir, the first one in the pool is healed, right? And so we find the man at the pool of Siloam and we find Jesus coming in and he walks up to this one guy on the mat and he says to him this, do you want to be healed? And I always thought, what a dumb question. What a ridiculous question. That's why he's there. Oh, but Jesus understood something very, very significant. He understood that that guy's whole culture and life had been built around that place. You see, he knew where his next meal was coming from. He knew who his friends are. He knew how the social structure around the pool worked, right? To be healed and to be whole meant he had to go out and learn a trade and become a contributing member to society. Everything in his life would be different and changed. No longer could he point to his paralyzed state or his illness as the reason for his life being what it was. So Jesus says, in essence, the same thing to you. Some of us get really comfortable with our anger, our righteous indignation, our scars. And we say, you know, let me just give you a list of what's happened to me. Man, I'll put my list up against yours any day of the week. Let me give you a list. I'll show you. This is why I'm the way I am. And Jesus says, do you want to be whole? Do you want to walk around scarred every day thinking about this? Or do you want to be absolutely and utterly made whole by me? See, it's only the touch of God that can do that in your life. You don't have enough in you to let go of it. But it's a deep and abiding question. Do you want to be healed? Because if you are, it will change everything. See, this morning, you need to know if Jesus noticed then, he notices you now. And he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And today, you don't have to leave this place without going to God in your heart and asking for that touch. But you don't do that easily, and you don't do that without contemplation. And so I invite you to watch a dramatic portrayal of the very event we've talked about. And then I invite you to reflect through communion, and then I'm going to give you some instructions about just being able to either come and be prayed for, stay where you are and talk to God, or leave quietly when you're ready.